Good morning, Steve Dale, WGN Radio, Steve Dale's Pet World, and you know who I have. Well, you don't yet because I didn't tell you, but I will. She is a dog trainer who speaks around the world about dog behavior, occasionally cat behavior too. Karen Pryor Academy certified faculty member, Laura Monaco Torelli. That lady I love having on this show because you have a soap opera name, Laura Monaco Torelli. Really, it sounds like you should be in a soap opera. And I'll tell you, the world of dog training has kind of been a soap opera in a way. So there was a dog trainer in 2020. One of the other wonderful 2020 events is this dog trainer who actually, this is astounding to believe. I know you know about this guy. But he not only uses shock collars on dogs routinely, including puppies, but also rolls up a big beach towel and puts rubber bands around him and then throws it at the dog. So I want to talk about appropriate dog training method and also what we call aversive or punishment-based training. I know you're a fan of positive reinforcement, Laura. Otherwise, I wouldn't have you on the radio over over and over again over the years. But I want to have you explain, you know, I'm out there all the time, as are you, saying we want to use positive reinforcement. But let's talk about why that is the case. And my hope is one of the trends for 2021 and on is we don't even consider trainers that are not using positive reinforcement. So can you comment about why you and I say what we say?
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, I just want to preface again, thank you so much for having me back on your show. And, you know, as we dig deeper into, you know, talking about dog training and the application of positive reinforcement is also looking through the lens of empathy and education when we have dog owners coming to us that are looking for additional help in their home for what are very real world problems for them. And, you know, you and I are always advocating for the dog handler, dog family relationship. And as we look at the laws of learning, and this is such a great opportunity for us to go a little bit beyond, you know, just saying, well, you know, don't use punishment because it's bad. I think it's important that we explain why and talk about behavior science and the laws of learning. And, you know, you and I know punishment, by definition, decreases the frequency of behavior. That's behavior science. And dog owners are smart. You know, we don't have to dumb down the laws of learning to them. Let's enhance it and let's give them examples. So when a dog owner reaches out to me for help, and let's say, you know, they say, you know, I'm thinking about using a shock collar, I will explain why I don't advocate the use of a shock collar, but I'll say, you know, can you describe to me what you find frustrating, what your dog is doing that you want less of, and what you want your dog to do more of? And, you know, let's just remember that the person doing the punishment, the person, you know, yelling at the dog or using techniques that you and I don't advocate, I think about how Kathy Sadeo, who is a brilliant trainer, talks about how it's reinforcing for the person that does the punishment to do it because there's immediate gratification in seeing the behavior stop.
That's
but
right.
What we're not taking into account are the side effects or what's called the fallout. So let's say, for instance, a dog gets shocked in the presence of the cat in the house, or a dog gets a shock from the shock collar and the presence of another dog approaching it. One side effect of the use of this aversive event is escape avoidance behavior in the presence of that aversive stimulus. So now the dog learns when another dog shows up, I get a shock. So now learning by association, the dog becomes fearful of the other dog, or if not fearful of the cat, another side effect is aggression. Mm-hmm. So the next time the cat shows up, you know, the owner might think, well, look, I made the dog stop chasing the cat. But by association, the cat's very presence is now a cue for pain, for some aversive around the dog's neck. So now the dog might actually, another fall, become aggressive towards the cat. What I've also seen is a lack of joy in the dog's behavior, a very still dog, which some might translate as now the dog is being obedient, now the dog is doing what I want, now the dog is listening. But you and I know that looking at dog body language, another side effect is reduction of offered behavior. So this dog is very still because they're now learning in this environment near my handler, I'm going to get a random shock, so I'm just going to be very still.
I want to talk about that part of it, Laura. So you and I imagine, because I get this all the time, anytime I write, and I do, about using shock collars or e-collars, electronic collars in particular, which, by the way, I applaud Petco because they said, even in the midst of a pandemic, that while these things make money for us, we are not going to sell them any longer. We've stopped selling them. And I love myself, and I imagine you agree, the fact that they've done it. But what you hear, I imagine all the time, because I know I hear it, is that, all right, maybe your average dog parent shouldn't use it. But what about professionals? What about people that have had dogs their entire lives, are aware of timing issues, as you kind of spoke about, and are careful about how they use it? Would you even then say this is still not a good idea? In part, you explain very, very well that this can impact the dog's entire demeanor.
Yeah. You know, again, these are such important questions. And I always try to keep an open dialogue for everyone to sit at the table, so to speak, so that when I am talking with another professional trainer that advocates the use of aversive or punishment, I try not to be mutually exclusive in shutting them out from having a conversation with me, because I want to develop a safe professional dialogue and repertoire where we can both talk about why we each choose to use what we, you know, use. Because, you know, if I have a trainer that advocates the use of, let's say, aversives or punishment, but they're pointing a finger at me and raising their voice and saying, you cookie pusher, you know,
yes,
all you do is use treats all the time. Well, that's not making me feel safe to say, you know what, why don't we talk a bit more about what I do? And then we are creating a dialogue. And so I would never want a trainer that uses aversives or punishment to feel like I've got my finger in their face, you know, fists in the air saying, what you're doing is cruel and mean. I would want to have a conversation, a calm conversation, and say, you know, I'm really interested in hearing more about your training approach and the conditions for why you reach for that equipment. And then we can have a dialogue. And so they can listen to why I advocate what I do, with the laws of learning and using positive reinforcement training, using a least intrusive, minimally invasive approach, which I know is such an important discussion that we hear from, IAABC and from other dog training certification organizations, where what's the least intrusive method that we can use and go that route with careful management.
And the big question is, that I'm sure you get asked all the time, all right, you have an aggressive dog here. How in the world can clicker training, being a cookie pusher, how can you deal with an aggressive? Well, it turns out you can, and I know that, and you'll explain when we come back on WGN. We are back with Laura Monaco Torelli, superstar dog trainer. In just a couple of minutes, stomatitis in cats. It's an immune-mediated disease that happens in cats. They need to get their teeth pulled out. It's just an awful thing. It's very painful. And there's a clinical trial that, in fact, is happening right now. So if you have a cat or know someone that does, listen up. We'll be talking about that in a moment. Laura Monaco Torelli, question to ask you. We're talking about positive reinforcement dog training. I'm sure you hear this all the time. All right. How can you just push cookies and clicker train, and you have to do a very fast review of clicker training in case people don't know, which is hands off, and deal with an aggressive dog? How do you do that?
Yeah, so many neat things for us to go through, and I'm going to kind of do like my trainer triage as I give this answer. First of all, when I hear the word aggression, you know, we have an aggressive dog. I help my clients or the training inquiry hone in on the language to explain that label. What does aggression look like to you? And have you notified your veterinarian? Have you ruled out any potential underlying medical issues? And so I make sure to look at the medical model as well and include the veterinarian, and maybe, you know, maybe a board certified vet behaviorist needs to come on board if there's a bite history as well. So first is, what does aggression look like, and what are the conditions in the environment that cue the dog to demonstrate what the owner is saying is aggression? If the dog doesn't have a bite history, the dog has gotten a full vet workup. The way that I'll integrate clicker training from a hands-off approach is, first of all, the dog might not want me near the dog. The dog might not want me spatially in his or her space. So the clicker is an acoustic marker that means that when the dog hears the click, it means that behavior that I clicked is reinforcement's going to follow in the form of food. And the laws of learning show us that behavior that gets reinforced increases with frequency. And what I like about the use of a clicker is it removes the dialogue and it quiets down the extra body movements, or even my voice could trigger a dog to lunge at me. So when I work with a dog under safe conditions, you know, a visual barrier, maybe the dog is wearing a basket muzzle, I can click and toss a treat towards the dog. So then the dog can learn through a training program, not just in 30 seconds, but that my presence means good things and not correction.
All right, perfect. Laura Monaco Torelli, you are more than a soap opera star. You are a dog training star. Thank you so very much. Dr. Chad Mackey is a stem cell researcher and the chief medical officer at Vet Cell Therapeutics USA. For cats with stomatitis, or if you have a friend, neighbor, or a relative who has a cat with stomatitis, listen up, Dr. Mackey. You are looking for people whose cats, I believe, have been diagnosed with stomatitis to say, hey, I can volunteer. Can you explain?
Hi, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here today. Really appreciate you having me on. Yeah, that's right. So with VetCell Therapeutics USA, we are recruiting patients, cat patients, that have feline chronic gingivostomatitis, or stomatitis for short. And they can go to a website called curefcgs.com to learn more about that trial. But we have a stem cell therapy called DentaHeal that we are running through the regulatory pathways, and we have this open trial recruiting patients across the United States at multiple dental specialist centers. And we're looking for patients that have long-term chronic stomatitis. They've already had their teeth extracted, and they are still suffering from their bad disease with bad symptoms in their mouth.
Which, very sadly, is way too many cats. And to make it clear, you know, it's just like people now hear about clinical trials because of the vaccine trials for COVID, right? More and more people know about clinical trials and what it's all about. This is not a disease that, unfortunately, maybe you'll have the answer. That's the whole point, that there's been any real answer to. And you're looking at stem cells to provide treatment here. Can you explain briefly what stem cells are and how that may help these cats?
Absolutely. So we are working with mesenchymal stem cells. They are adult stem cells from adipose or fat tissue. And these are the great communicators in the body. They communicate with the immune system, with other specialized cell types to have many different functions. For this particular disease, the most important function that they play is that they have immunomodulation property and anti-inflammatory property. So they go into the body and they help to try and reset these cats' immune system. They are dysregulated. They are reacting to stimuli and have chronic inflammation and pain in their mouth. So the mesenchymal stem cells, or DentaHeal, the product we're working on, goes in and communicates with the immune system to reset it to more of a regulatory state to knock down that chronic inflammation. And that is the hope.
Now, the Win Feline Foundation has already done or funded research to demonstrate that what you're talking about in theory actually can make sense. It really can happen to help these cats. And it makes sense because stomatitis is an inflammatory disease. It's an immune-mediated disease. And these cats, the outcome, first of all their teeth need to be pulled. Currently, that is going to be the case no matter what. But a significant percent of cats, even when that happens, that in of itself, as I understand it, doesn't solve this very, very painful, hugely painful disease, so much so that the cat's personalities often change because they're in pain all the time. So far, anyway, no pain medication has been able to help these cats. And it's really a problem for these cats. So you're talking about potentially a lifesaver, I believe.
That's absolutely right, Steve. And you brought up the Wynn Foundation and the work that has the early work that has been done at UC Davis together with Dr. Borgeson and Dr. Arzi. And we've actually teamed up with UC Davis and Dr. Arzi in particular for this product and this trial. And they have published work already that cats respond long-term to this MSC therapy. This is unheard of. In the past, there is no therapy that helps these cats long-term, and many pet owners are faced with the difficult decision of euthanasia. Yeah. Well, what we're looking to do is offer these cats a chance of hope, a better quality of life, and a long life. And that's what we're aiming to do with DentaHeal.
All right, so once again, for further information, curefcgs.com. If you have a cat with stomatitis or you know someone that does, you may want to tell them about that, and perhaps they can join that clinical trial, which ultimately can help their cat, but maybe many other cats as well. Dr. Chad Mackey of VetCell Therapeutics USA, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve. Take care.
When we come back, nothing will look the same in 2021, we hope. But one thing that'll be different for sure is the way we fly with animals. I'll talk about that right here on WGN. Next week on the show, we speak with Nellie Olson. Remember, Allison Arngrim from Little House on the Prairie. She was voted the, can I say this word on the radio? I don't think I can. The nastiest? That I can say, but think of the word that begins with the letter B. I mean, of all the people in the history of television. Well, she said, on my Sunday afternoon show we spoke, and she said, I want to talk with you about animals. And that's what she is going to do next week. We'll also talk about what Purina is doing. It's a product called Live Clear. So are you allergic to cats? Well, this cat food, this is quite incredible. It's a cat food for people. Yes, the cat food is good for cats. It's a fine cat food. But what it will do is it will eliminate our allergies to cats. When you're allergic to cats, you're actually allergic to a protein on the saliva, and this neutralizes the food, there's an ingredient in the food that neutralizes that protein, doesn't eliminate it, neutralizes it. So we're not allergic to it anymore. How about technology, huh? Forget about the COVID vaccine being so cool. This is what's really cool. So are you flying maybe eventually in 2021? Well, if so, you can't take your pet with you the same way that you've been able to do for the last couple of years. The notion of comfort animals and flying with them, that's not going to happen. The skies are not going to be so friendly for flying pigs, snakes on a plane, peacocks. That is now over. So the emotional support or comfort animals, no, have to be legitimate service dogs. And you know what? I like that. I think that's a, I mean, we don't really need to fly with pigs. And even if your pig comforts you in some way, come on. I mean, this it's gotten way out of control. However, having said that, I have a couple of concerns. Service animals, by the strict definition, don't include cats, and I think it should. So it prevents us from, yeah, of course, you could put a cat in a carrier and put the carrier under the seat in front of you if the airline allows that, and not all airlines allow that. So you know what? We've got to stand up for cats. I'll talk to you next Sunday morning, which happens to be next year. Steve Dale's Pet World, WGN.